It's beginning to look a lot like, well, just another day. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Well, Barry, as always, it's good to be back with you. You know, this is very unusual. 2 weeks in a row, we've been in the studio, in the same studio.
Well, you know, that's the vicissitudes of the thing they call lame duck session of the Ohio legislature, Chuck, because that means I am up in Columbus on Thursdays during lame duck. And, of course, since we are recording here in your spacious and lovely and cozy warm studios right next door to your production facility for your business, we are basically I'm sitting here kind of multitasking right now. It's kind of funny because you and I are recording this live now, but I've got my phone open, or at least trying to keep it open because it keeps dropping it because it's government. It's a government feed.
Right.
I'm watching the session of the Ohio House live right now, which was supposed to have started earlier today at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, but didn't get started till about 2:30, quarter to three. We had this scheduled to tape today, so I'm waiting for a bill, which has yet to appear because for some reason it seems like these folks are trying to avoid getting to a vote on this. And what I'm looking for, and we've talked about on this program a number of times, is House Bill 258, which is the heartbeat bill, or the Ohio Human Heartbeat Protection Act is what I like to call it, because I don't like having the little, you know, shorthand stuff because it's too easy to, you know, caricaturize it.
Yeah.
By doing that. But really what this is about, it's a bill. It's been around for 8 years, Chuck. We've been working on this bill for 8 years. It's to basically say that if you can detect a heartbeat in an unborn child, you cannot kill it by abortion, period. It's a pretty straightforward bill. It would look to protect about 90 to 95% of the, now let me roll this number out for you, 20,865 babies that are killed every year in Ohio.
How many again?
By abortion. 20,865.
And we keep hearing that the abortion issue is nothing like it has been. You know, we're winning the battle, and yet 20,000 continue to be aborted every year.
Now, okay, I will give some limited amount of credit, because if you look at the numbers over the past 8 years of John Kasich's gubernatorial administration, the governor whom Ohio Right to Life calls the most pro-life governor the state's ever had, I understand why they say, okay, I do understand in one sense why they say that. Because abortion numbers went from about 27,000 to about 20,000 in the last 8 years. But Chuck, really, what's been the trend line here in Ohio for the last 8 years? It hasn't necessarily been strategic, wonderful bills that Ohio Right to Life has been introducing. And, you know, if you get offended by that, folks, then you need to take a closer look at what they do.
Right.
That has reduced the number. It's strategic moves behind the scenes where we actually tweak things like, oh, making sure that they have to have a transfer agreement for an abortion clinic to operate, or saying, nope, you can't have a backup physician that's located, or a hospital that's more than 30 miles away from your facility, because, well, you know, we actually do care about women's health and as long with the babies. And so those things, Chuck, and okay, it's going to sound like I'm tooting my horn, but toot! We're done because for the Right to Life Action Coalition worked behind the scenes in the waning hours of budget cycles and lame duck sessions to convince legislators to put these provisions in law. That's why we went from having 16 abortion clinics in Ohio 8 years ago to having 7 right now, with the possibility of at least one, if not more, of them closing in the near future. That's the reason why you had abortion numbers go down. Now, there's only one small problem. 2 years ago, just about this time of year, Chuck. As a matter of fact, it was really actually almost, no, it'll be like next week will be to the day. 2 years ago, Governor John Kasich had the opportunity to really be the most pro-life governor in Ohio's history. He could have signed the heartbeat bill that the Ohio General Assembly passed and sent to him. They also sent the 20-week abortion ban, what they call the Pain Capable Act. This was in December. This was during lame duck 2 years ago. And folks, that's a lame duck session only happens at the end of a session cycle every 2 years after an election. That's usually when we have lame duck. John Kasich chose to do something that to this day and on into the future, I probably will never forgive him for. He chose to sign the Pain Capable a bill, which, okay, it might save some babies. And he chose to veto the one that would definitely save 95% of those 20-plus thousand that are dying every year. He vetoed the heartbeat bill. And, of course, under a previous Speaker of the House, they couldn't moxie up enough support of legislators to come back and override the governor because, well, it was in the middle of the governor's last term, and, oh, some of those members might be able to get an appointment from the governor to some cushy job. No, I'm not being sarcastic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just telling you the way things work around there.
Right.
Well, roll ahead 2 years, Chuck. We fought the fight again. The heartbeat bill was reintroduced, went through the chamber. We have been fighting and fighting and fighting. The House finally sent it out last month to the Senate. The Senate, after dragging their feet, and we went through a couple of what I call show pony hearings, for those who are like neophytes to this and they're watching from outside, it doesn't look like it's a show pony because in 4 days of hearings, stretching from early last week to this week, there were 88 people who came in and testified on heartbeat, whether for it or against it. There were some doozies on the opposing side. I mean, we had a self-proclaimed witch who stands with Planned Parenthood. We had a Unitarian Universalist minister who basically said that life begins when the child takes its first breath. We had a Jewish rabbi who basically said the same thing. But then we had women who have had complications from abortions, women who regret ever having an abortion, and women who were standing up for the heartbeat bill. Well, the Senate finally got the job done. They passed the bill out of committee, and this has been a long, long week and a half for me, Chuck. Ever since we recorded last week, if you remember last week, I was a little frustrated because we were supposed to get that bill out, and it didn't happen.
Listen to last week's show, which you can do on our website, www.principledpolicy.com.
Absolutely. Good plug there. Thank you. I was a little frustrated because it didn't get done. And then we roll into this week, and hearing gets scheduled. And then all of a sudden, you know, we've got amendments. So we're going to recess and come back. And then we go and we find out that there are amendments. And we did get on Wednesday morning, Chuck. Yesterday morning. We were recording this on Thursday. Yesterday morning, the Senate Health Committee reconvened, and of course, the Democrats decided they'd throw a bunch of amendments, and those were all tabled. But the Republicans threw two amendments on the bill. And actually, after reading them and talking to the chairman of the committee, I understood. I understood that he was right in bringing the amendments because they strengthened the bill. There had been a change in Ohio's laws in relation to the opioid crisis that basically created a situation that if the bill had gone through as stood, a provider could have been charged with violating the heartbeat bill provisions, but he could have held his license and still practiced and still killed babies until all the court cases were done. So the chairman of the committee who said, I talked to him Wednesday morning, he said, it dawned on me last night, we hadn't addressed that. So he goes, that's the reason why I needed to amend it, because I know we want to try to get this through. He was just basically, you know, he was apologetic, but he wanted to fix this. So they did. They fixed it in committee so that now if you are charged with violating this law, you can have your license immediately suspended by the oversight panel, which is the state medical board, until the outcome of your case. And sometimes these criminal cases, Chuck, can take 5 to 6 years to go through the process.
At least. Sometimes longer.
Sometimes longer. Well, that means that their license would be suspended until all that gets done. So that was a good fix because I would rather have the provider who is willfully killing babies stopped cold and find something else to do with your life until we put you in jail than have him hold his license, continue to practice, continue to prey on unsuspecting women and kill unborn children because there was a misstructuring of the way the bill was written. So kudos to Dave Burke from Marysville, who was the chairman of the Senate Health Committee, who caught this and added the amendment. So we get to yesterday, and the bill, and so that was committee. So they report it from committee. They go to rules. Rules takes it to the floor. We get to the floor, and of course, when they call the bill up, it's after they've done almost everything else they can do on the bill, on their agenda. So you get a number of the Democrats and They offered six different amendments on the bill on the floor. All of them were tabled by the Republican majority. Almost all the Republican majority.
Almost.
Because what you ended up having was, on those amendments, there were three Republican legislators who voted with the Democrats every single time. Matt Dolan from the Cleveland area, Stephanie Coonsey from Columbus, and Gail Manning from Lorain County, who then will become Representative Manning in January because she and her son have done the seat switch swap thing. You know, our problem,
right.
Our problem with our term limits.
Well, yeah, we've chronicled that on several occasions.
Oh yes, yeah. Yes. So we still have that.
The fraud of term limits in Ohio.
So there are only 9 members of the Democratic caucus. Okay, in a 33 member Senate chamber. So therefore, they really don't have a whole lot of clout. But then when they get 3 Republicans voting with them, then it's 12. And then on about half of the amendments, and they're all crippling amendments to the bill, okay? Let's not kid ourselves. Not a single one of them was to help the bill. On half of them, Senator John Eklund from Geauga County, another Republican, squish moderate, votes with the Democrats. It's like, okay, what's going on here? This is nuts. Well, they finally get past all of the amendments and tabled all of them, and then they get to the vote, and of course, everybody has to... All the folks who don't like the bill have to get up and say their piece. And, of course, some of the people who are defending the bill get up and say their piece. During this whole debate, when the bill was called, from the time the bill was called up, there was a group that was sitting in the gallery. And, of course, in the Senate chambers, the floor of the Senate and the gallery are all on the same level. So you sit around the outside rim of the Senate floor. On the side where the Republican members sat in the gallery were this group of pro-abort advocates who all were wearing black T-shirts and had a letter on them. And of course, it spelled out, stop the ban. So they stood as soon as the bill was called up for consideration, and they stood there during the entire debate, trying to get media attention, really, is what I think.
Of course. Well, of course.
Yeah, that's what it was all about.
That nothing is not for media attention on the left.
But you know what, Chuck? In reflecting on it last night, I started laughing uproariously. They messed up royally. They sat on the wrong side of the room. They were standing on the behind where the Republicans sat. They wouldn't see them.
They were on the camera. They were on the camera side.
No. Well, they were on the camera, trying to get on the camera, which meant that their messaging was basically being ignored by the people they're trying to sway.
Right.
They should have sat on the other side of the room, where, as all those Republican seats point into the Senate president's dais,
right,
all the Democrat ones point from the other side into the Senate president. So the Democrats see that side of the room that they were on. The Republicans see the other side of the room. If you're going to try to send a message to people you think are voting in favor of it to try to get them to not, you stand on the other side of the room.
Yes, exactly.
It was a dumb, dumb move. Okay. And honestly, by the time you get to a floor, everybody's got their mind made up where they're going to, most people. I should say that because I think we had one senator who got a little confused. I think he got more than a little confused. And that's John Eklund. Because like I said, half a dozen crippling amendments. He votes in favor of tabling half of them and votes with the Democrats to not table the other half. But there was no rhyme or reason to it. So we finally get to the called vote. Well, another issue is, and I'll say, the final vote on the bill in the Senate was 18-13. Well, you need 20 votes to override a governor's veto. Remember how many Democrats I told you were on the committee? Are on the Senate? How many Democrats are part of the 33-member Senate?
It's like 13.
It's nine.
Nine.
But the final vote was 18-13. Now, I told you about the three that were
right. They
are completely in line with the left on this issue. Which
means somebody jumped ship.
Dolan, Manning, and Coonsey all consistently vote against this bill. So that was 12. The 13th vote against the heartbeat bill was Senator John Eklund. who, when they called his name, sat there for like 30, 40 seconds. And it was almost like he didn't understand what he was being asked to do. And he sat there, and everybody's looking at him, and he's just kind of sitting there looking through papers and stuff, and they call his name again. And then he looks up, he kind of hesitates, and he votes no. Well, I've heard through the grapevine since yesterday that he's basically been very apologetic.
He desperately wants a reconsideration.
About his vote. Because I think what happened is he thought he was voting on tabling an amendment. He wasn't paying attention.
Yeah, he was doing something else.
He was doing something else.
Yeah.
Okay. The other problem is, or two other problems. Now, remember, if you only have 9 senators, you've got 24 Republicans, right? 9 Democrats, 24 Republicans, and 33. Well, they've only got 23 Republicans right now.
Yeah, we talked about this last week, but go over it again.
Okay, because with the ascension of former State Senator Troy Balderson to Congress, his Senate seat has not been filled yet. It has been selected. Brian Hill, who's the representative from Zanesville in the House, has been picked by the Senate caucus to replace Troy Balderson. But they haven't seated him yet because Representative Hill doesn't want to be seated in the Senate until the end of the year or until January when they reconvene. Why, Chuck? What, wouldn't you think he'd want to jump right over there right now and, you know, get that, you know, he's appointed in and he gets a little bit of heads up on the next class coming in? No, he wants to try to stay in the House to support Ryan Smith's bid to continue to be Speaker. Because it's iffy right now. And I'm going to talk about that in a minute, too, because, boy, there's a talk about somebody who just got coal in their stocking for a Christmas present. Ryan Smith just got some coal in his stocking. And it's very, very sad, but you know what? It happens. It's sad for him. I'm nonplussed about the whole issue.
Yeah.
Personally, I'm nonplussed because, you know, I got to work with people regardless of who's holding the gavel. So you've got that. Okay, so now we're down to 23. How many did I say voted with the Democrats against the bill?
4.
So that leaves how many? From 23 minus 4, we're doing 19. Some simple math. Okay, good. You are awake tonight, today. But I just told you what was the final vote count? 18 to 13.
Right.
Senator Frank LaRose from Akron left the session before the heartbeat bill was called up.
Okay.
From what I understand, he had a good excuse. He was leaving to catch an airplane flight because he's out of state today. He's not there in the Senate today. Because I think he was going to some conference because he is now our Secretary of State elect.
Exactly.
He will take office in January as the Secretary of State. And I think there was some national conference for Secretaries of State that as the incoming Secretary of State, he really is supposed to show up for.
He should be there. Yeah.
And you have to remember, a week ago, everybody was projecting that the heartbeat bill was going to be voted in the Senate last week. But they dragged it out until they ended up doing it yesterday. Okay, if you've got a conference that you have to go to as part of your job, and you've already bought your airfare, and somebody says, "Oh, I'm sorry, but we're going to move this meeting to this day that you got to leave," okay, and you know you got to at least be at the meeting. You'll stay as long as you can, right? But then there comes a point where you got to say, "I got to go catch a plane."
You
got to
beat feet for the airport because
you got to go. You know, there's just no way around it. You got to go.
They can get you through security as quick as they can, but you still have to go through security.
So Frank LaRose wasn't there either. So now we're down to 22 Republicans live in the room, and 4 of them just defected. That's why we only got 18 votes. Now, the governor may be looking at that saying, "Oh, look at that. They didn't get 20 votes, so I don't have to worry about them overriding a veto, so I'm going to veto the bill," which John Kasich once again has promised he will veto the heartbeat bill. The most pro-life governor history has decided that once again he is going to allow the 18,000+ babies that could be saved by this bill to go ahead and continue to be slaughtered. Oh, did I mention this last year's report of the abortion report? Abortions have gone back up.
Yeah, see, let's talk about this for a second. This is a logical fallacy. The most pro-life governor in Ohio history. Okay, this question has not really been a question except since 1973.
Exactly.
So, claiming that you're more pro-life than the first governor of the state is absurd, because if you went to that governor and said, what do you think about abortion?
They would have said it's a criminal enterprise.
It's a criminal enterprise. Yeah, it's exactly.
exactly.
And if we catch you, you will go to jail, and you very likely you could be executed.
Chuck, I've looked at it. I've seen the statute books from Ohio from 1972. Do you know how? Okay, today in our code, the abortion regulations in the Ohio statute take up like 30 or 40 pages of text inside the books.
Yeah.
Maybe even a little bit more than that. Do you know how extensive our abortion regulation was in 1972?
Oh, not very. It just said it's forbidden.
Two paragraphs.
Yeah.
One to say it's illegal, and the other one to say, well, if it's a miscarriage, then, you know, you've got an out.
Right. Well, it's what it's always been, and that is if you treat the mother and the baby dies, you know, you've done everything you can to save the life of the mother. It's not an abortion.
It's not you're not performing an abortion at that point. So, yeah, absolutely. So, there you have it. So, here we are. So, we went from two paragraphs to 40 plus pages of, and did I mention regular? See, Chuck, that was the other key. And I hope our listeners were paying attention. Now we have 40 plus pages of how to regulate the abortion.
Yes.
So that it's done according to the book. In 1972, we had two paragraphs that just outlawed it.
Yeah. And said basically, if there's a question about whether it was abortion or not, and it was a mother being treated for a disease, and the baby died, it wasn't an abortion, so don't worry about it.
Exactly. That was it. That was how simple our laws were back then, before the debacle of Roe v. Wade. And, of course, its subsequence, the Planned Parenthood versus Casey and the Windsor and all those other cases that have come since then. But the heartbeat bill is actually geared to challenge all of that at the Supreme Court. And you know what? I think John Kasich is very well aware of that, Chuck. And so is the Republican Party. And wouldn't it be just a crying shame for them if they lost a big issue that they can go out and get their base voters worked up enough to go out and make phone calls for them and go knock on doors and go work the polls and get them out to vote for the Republican slate?
You just named the 100-year plan.
Bingo. Absolutely is. We just drag this out ad infinitum, ad nauseum. We make it look like we're making progress, but in reality, well, okay, we're not really.
If you don't know what we're talking about, the 100-year plan is Planned Parenthood's 100-year plan to end abortion.
Oh, but you just misspoke yourself, Chuck. You said Planned Parenthood. Everybody would think that. No, that's Ohio Right to Life's plan.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no. It's okay.
Yeah.
It's a Freudian slip.
It's a misspeak.
It's a Freudian slip.
It's a Freudian slip. No, it's right. Ohio Right to Life's, not in Ohio, it's the National Right to Life plan to end abortion in 100 years. Now, I first heard about this plan probably about 2004 or 5.
Yeah, it's been around about 15 years. Yeah.
So are we now at 85 years? No.
No,
we're still at 100.
We're still at 100 plus now. So
yeah.
I keep saying, okay, I guess they've decided they want to revise it, and now it's a 200-year plan.
And unless you think that we're sticking a knife in the back of our allies, these people are not our allies. They sabotage real changes to abortion law whenever they can.
2 years ago, when the governor had heartbeat and the 20-week ban in front of him, Ohio Right to Life, the chairman of their board and their president, signed a letter to the governor asking him to sign the 20-week ban and not sign heartbeat.
Yes.
In other words, they wanted him to veto it. Well, they took some heat from that. So what happened this cycle? They've just stayed quiet publicly about heartbeat while they've been pushing other weak bills. Now, why do you think that today, Chuck, before I got over here, the House finished a vote on a Senate bill that would supposedly ban what's called dismemberment or D&E abortions? Ohio Right to Life signature legislation for the session. Going to be voted out the same day heartbeat is and sent to the governor at the same time.
Oh, he'll sign that.
Starting to look like a repeat of 2016?
Yep.
Yeah, the only thing is they're going to be smart enough not to send a letter this time, my guess. It's the same old song and dance, Chuck. That lobby wants to perpetuate itself.
Of course.
That's why the 100-year plan. Because, well, y'all be dead in 100 years, and you won't be around to point back to when they basically cut the deal with the devil to say we're okay with babies getting killed as long as we address it slowly enough. Well, we're tired of that. We're all tired of that. You should be tired of that, ladies and gentlemen. You should be tired of wasting your time, energy, and effort on a group that only wants to regulate it. Oh, we can only do what the courts will allow us to do. Chuck, the whole thing is, how in the world did we ever get rid of slavery in this country?
Well, I mean,
because obviously the courts had ruled.
That's right.
The Supreme Court had ruled that people of color were property.
Were below citizenship.
They were property. How did we get to that point of having a civil rights movement and having all the laws change? Well, gosh, I guess somebody had to go to the courts with a different argument, didn't they?
Yeah, we actually here's what we had to do. We had to pass a constitutional amendment to make people of color equal.
Right,
because everybody's
equal.
Everybody's equal.
In God's eyes.
We're talking about in the eyes of the law, because right. black men, people of color have always been equal, and whites have always been equal in the sight of God.
Right. It's sort of like the old quote from Animal Farm: on the farm, all the animals were equal except the pigs. More equal than others.
I believe a quote from the Dred Scott decision was that a black man has no rights that a white man is bound to respect.
Right. That was a decision of the United States Supreme Court. So if you take the current logic of our friends over at Ohio Right to Life, that we can only push as far as the courts will let us. Well, it's no wonder that unborn babies are now the new chattel property of the 21st century. Folks, let that sink in.
And you know what happens? You and I have both made this argument. Oh, well, you want to equate slavery and abortion.
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely we do.
Unequivocally, I'm equating those two things.
Yes. Yeah, because the mindset is exactly the same. Slaves were less than human in that particular mindset, and fetuses, which in Latin means unborn baby, are subhuman in that mind. All you have to do is listen to the undifferentiated blob of cells. And by the way, that particular phase of development is way within days of conception.
Right, absolutely. Okay, again, Is the heartbeat bill the panacea for everything? No, it's not. Are there still going to be babies who could be subject to dying because of they've been conceived and it's prior to 6 weeks you don't hear a heartbeat? Yeah, it can happen. But for a governor of the state to sit there and say that he wants to sign a bill that, in the definition of the act that it's banning, it creates a loophole so that you can go ahead and continue to commit the act as long as you certify, and this is the medical provider certifying himself or herself, that you didn't violate the provisions of this law in killing the unborn baby. Chuck, wouldn't you like to be able to write a law like that, I'm going to write a law that says that you are going to be in violation if you do X, and you have to report on yourself whether or not you did X, and if you report that you didn't do X, then you're completely clear of any of the prohibitions or the penalties of this law.
Yeah, so basically you can violate the law, swear that you didn't, and voila, you keep your license, you keep getting to do the procedure,
right?
No problem.
Well, okay, and here's the deal. They define, okay, the D&E procedure, dismemberment, is where you take an instrument, you go up, and the baby's inside the womb, and you tear it apart limb from limb to kill it and to extract it out of the uterus. The way the language in the definition of that act is written, it is not a dismemberment abortion. If you use some other method to kill the baby first, then you are free to go up in there with the same instruments, tear the unborn child's body limb from limb to extract it. But Chuck, I told another pro-life friend of mine down at the State House earlier today, I said, I wish we had some specification in report, in the abortion report, as to the method that's used to kill the unborn, because I'm going to bet, and I am a gambling man on this one, I'm going to bet that the number of umbilical resection abortions goes through the roof, because that's one of the ways you can kill an unborn baby.
Right.
And think about it, Chuck. If I'm in a hurry and I know I'm the only one who's reporting on myself, you're still going to go up in there and tear that baby apart, and then you're going to take a pair of
snips
and snip the umbilical cord so that it looks like that's how you killed the baby.
Yeah. So basically, what happens is the baby, deprived of all blood supply and oxygen, writhes around until it's dead.
Right.
And then you can pull it apart.
And then you can pull it apart.
If you don't actually pull it apart while it's still alive,
and then you just cut so that it looks like you did the cord first.
Because there's no putting the cord back together.
Exactly. Okay. We work behind the scenes with Representative Jim Butler, who is a serious pro-lifer. We had amendments to fix the problem, to get the bill to where it actually had what I call enforcement mechanisms and teeth in it, knowing that they were going to pass it because it's a higher right to life's bill, and that's their payback for being good little loyalists to the Republican Party and endorsing all of them, even the ones who vote against them on their bills. And that's happened, folks.
Yep.
That's their payback. Oh, that's our marquee piece we're going to go out and raise money on, so you need to pass it for us. So what happened? Our representative, who sits on the committee this was in, files amendments to get rid of that language and to clean up the bill and to put some teeth in it. The chairman of the committee said, oh, I gotta go talk to a couple people on this. And then he calls him back in a couple hours. We're not taking any of those amendments. Who do you think he called?
He called
the speaker.
He called Right to Life.
And he called Mike Onodakis.
Mike Onodakis had a higher right to life. Yeah.
Who said they don't want their bill touched. Because they don't care, Chuck. To them, this is... They'll say that I'm slandering them.
Yes.
Okay, you know what? It's only slander if I don't already know what you're doing.
Yeah, it's slander if it's not true.
And honestly, folks, it's true. This is what I call a faux life bill, not a pro life bill.
Yeah.
FAUX life bill, because it looks good on the face of it. It gets you all warm and fuzzy, but it actually does nothing to reduce the number of abortions, advance the pro life cause, and it actually can hurt us in the long run, because it also writes in a new section of Ohio statute that reconfirms the legality of two first trimester abortion procedures. Now, they did that years ago when they were passing partial birth abortion ban. They wrote in that, these procedures could remain legal. It's just this one procedure we're getting rid of. Well, now we're getting rid of one of those procedures that we said was legal before. We're writing in, these other two remain legal.
Do you remember what we said at the time? And everybody said, oh, you're insane. They said, you just put abortion procedures
into
the law
as an affirmative.
Right. And they've never been there before.
They were never there before that. Yeah, I remember you and I were screaming about that. And everybody's like, oh, no.
You don't understand.
You don't understand.
Yeah.
Okay, well, here's one of the things. Knowing that this thing is completely unenforceable, I don't really expect the Planned Parenthood and NARAL to challenge it all that hard. They might try to file an injunction.
No, because they know what this means.
Just to save face, they know it means that nothing changes.
As a fundraiser, they'll file.
They can raise a lot of money off of it.
They'll file
a
court action, which they know is going nowhere.
They can raise a lot of money off of it.
Because they can use a fraction of the money they raise to pay the attorneys.
Because, and I'm sure they've thought about this, because I know I've thought about it. If they challenge this and win, and they knock this particular statute out, they have set a precedent that we were right all along, Chuck, that writing an affirmative legality of an abortion procedure into the statute was the wrong thing to do. Because, remember, under the partial birth statute, a D&E was considered to be legal. It was only the partial birth version that they were trying to ban. So if the court uses what they wrote in the partial birth abortion ban to say, look, the legislature said this is legal, And so this bill is not going to be taken up as constitutional because it's violating the legality of how are they saying it now in the abortion world? A standard of care, Chuck. Abortion is a standard of care. I heard medical students that Planned Parenthood trotted in during the committee talking about how horrible it would be that they'd have to go out of state because they couldn't believe that the legislature would be so draconian as to ban a standard of care for women. Chuck, what happened to the Hippocratic Oath?
First, do no harm.
Oh, well, okay, it's first do no harm unless they can't defend themselves. Then go ahead and harm them all you want.
Yeah, harm anybody you feel like.
Okay, well, I'm still trying to figure out here, Chuck, as I'm like bouncing back and forth trying to figure out what's going on. They still haven't brought it up for, I mean, here we are. We're well into our recording. They have been going on the floor for 4 hours. They still haven't gotten to
it yet. Well, you and I went out to lunch.
Yes.
I
drove from Columbus to Newark. Yeah. We went to lunch. We've come here. We've been taping this as long as we've been here.
Almost 40 minutes.
And they still have not brought up the concurrence of the Senate vote to the House because the House has to agree to it when they amend it in the Senate. Again, those amendments that they put in Heartbeat were great, but we need them to get it done so that they can send the bill to the governor to start because he gets 10 days, Chuck, excepting Sundays. And that would put 2 Sundays between now and the 10 days. Even if they sent it to him today, he'd still have 2 Sundays. So 12 days, basically. What's today's date?
It is the 13th.
What's 12 days from now?
Yeah. let's see, the 25th. Oh, gosh.
So what they're going to do is they're pushing this out so they can't send it to him today. It'll be sent to him tomorrow if they get it voted.
Right.
Now, they don't have session tomorrow, so they don't get it done if they, like, they bump doing consideration of Senate amendments to next week.
It passes out.
Well, it's done.
It's over.
It's over with because he'll run the clock out. But if they do it tomorrow, if they send it to him tomorrow, his last day is the day after Christmas. They're scheduled to come back in on the 27th and 28th for veto overrides. They could override the governor. And again, we know we've got 20 votes sitting in the Senate because Frank LaRose has recommitted that he was a yes vote on the bill. He just had to leave. And Brian Hill is, that was the other thing. And I know I've taken up the entire program.
But no, we need to explain
this is the inside baseball stuff.
No,
the reason why Brian Hill may be going to the Senate much quicker than January, which is when he wanted to go, is because of a little news article that hit yesterday, and I think it was a Cleveland Plain Dealer. Great, lovely picture of the two men who are vying to be the speaker for the next session. Ryan Smith, who's the current speaker, and Larry Household, who was a former speaker who came back. Headline in this newspaper article, state labor unions encourage Democrats to get behind Householder. Chuck, when Cliff Rosenberger disgracefully left the legislature, it left a gap that took a month and a half to fill. What happened was when they got to the floor to put Ryan Smith in a speaker, they went 11 rounds of voting. Smith never did get more than 42 votes.
Yes, I remember.
He never lost him, but he never got any more either.
This would have happened near the end of May.
This was the end of May.
And if you go back and listen to our programming at www.principledpolicy.com, you can find a program where we discuss this in depth.
Absolutely. So it went 11 votes. And Chuck, there's a rule in the House that if you have a vote for speaker and no individual takes a majority, which in a 99-member body is 50 votes. If no one can achieve a majority of the votes after 10 rounds of voting, in the 11th round of voting, the member who has a plurality, the highest number of votes short of 50, becomes the speaker. Well, that headline in the newspaper of the labor unions encouraging the Democrats, and that's their natural base is labor unions, to get behind Larry Householder as speaker, because right now both Householder and Smith are vying for this next year. Neither one of them has 50 votes yet. The dean of the Republican caucus, Jim Butler, our champion on the amendments on the bill, refuses to call for a vote for Speaker until one of the two of them can prove that they've got the 50 votes. Because he's not going to preside over a train wreck. If you're the minority leader, Fred Strayhorn from Dayton, you're in the catbird seat right now. You've got one of your caucus's strongest bases asking you to go and get behind one of those two guys. You don't have to. Because in May, when they voted for Speaker, there were four people who were vying for Speaker. It was Ryan Smith, who is the current Speaker, who won after 11 rounds. Two other Republican members, and it varied between the two members on who got picked to be the... And they basically got like 16, 17, 18 votes each time. But then there was the fourth guy who was running who kept getting 32 votes every time. Fred Strayhorn, the minority leader, because his caucus, except for two members, were voting with him. One member who voted with Smith and one member who just didn't vote because that member had been shoved out of their caucus because he's Christian, pro-life.
Yeah, we can't have that. We can't have that.
Pro-natural marriage, a pastor. Well, they've disbarred him from the caucus. He's on his way out anyway. This is his last term.
Well, they're doing to him what the Republicans do to...
They're shoving him out the door.
Yeah.
Well, Strayhorn kept getting the same 32 votes. If we go into January, we had an election, Chuck. The House Republicans lost 5 seats. That means Fred Strayhorn's sitting on 37 votes.
Yep.
And all he has to do is just sit there and watch those two guys beat each other up for 10 rounds of voting. And on the 11th round, I'm going to guess strongly that 37 votes beats the 28 to 29 that each one of them have. And Fred Strayhorn, the Democrat, will become the Speaker of a Republican majority legislature.
Well, as you and I talked about at lunch, it's a long shot.
But it's not outside the realm of possibility.
No, it's not.
But what I think is going to happen, and this is the reason why I say Ryan Smith just got a lump of coal in his stocking, that as it gets closer and closer to that 10th vote, the folks who are behind Smith are going to see the writing on the wall. Either you take a Fred Strayhorn back Larry Householder as your Speaker, or you get behind Larry Householder, keep the Democrats from gaining control over your splinter of the caucus. So Ryan Smith can't win either way.
Yeah.
He's either going to get Larry Householder a Speaker or Fred Strayhorn a Speaker, but it doesn't seem like there's any mathematical way now that Ryan Smith has a chance at being Speaker for the next 2 years. Now, again, a lot of things could change, but the other thing, and I'm just going to hazard a guess here, that article hit the newspaper yesterday, Chuck. Now, think about this. Why would someone who's playing the inside baseball, especially a special interest like a union, want to go to the media and tell them that they're trying to convince the Democrats to get behind Householder? Because they're behind Householder already, and they are helping out. Because it hurt Ryan Smith for that article to come out.
Well, we talked about how Householder basically had the inside track because of infighting that was going on inside the Republican Party with the election and things that had happened in the primary.
Yep.
Whose candidates won primary election seats.
They won a number of the primary seats. Now, the ones that the Republicans actually lost in total to the Democrats were mostly Householder's people. Why? Because the Ryan Smith
cabal-controlled
OROC, which is the Ohio House Republican Operating Committee, i.e. the funding arm of their campaigns, refused to give money to those candidates who were behind Larry Householder.
And guess who's involved in that?
And guess what they actually did? They actually strengthened Fred Strayhorn, who now can act as the spoiler to get Larry Householder to be the new Speaker.
This is called cutting off your nose to spite your face.
And they are feeling the pain right about now.
Basically, OROC, if I'm not mistaken, was run by my state,
state representative, Scott Ryan,
Scott Ryan, who basically also, by the way, just voted to kill babies.
Yeah, Scott Ryan was one of the seven Republicans when the heartbeat bill was up in the House earlier in November who voted against moving it ahead.
Yeah.
Now, they got 60 votes in the House. We talked about that, too, on our previous program. So go back and listen to our archives. But Scott Ryan voted against protecting unborn babies. Scott Ryan controlled the money that blocked five Republicans from continuing to, for new people to continue to hold Republican seats. And so they lost them to the Democrat caucus, which votes pro-abort as a unit, with the exception of the Bill Patman, who I told you about, who no longer caucuses.
Who isn't allowed to caucus.
And who won't be there next year.
And I would guess that that was part of the spillover that helped, for instance, make sure that, I don't think this is a bad thing,
that Democrat Tina Maharath knocked Ann Gonzalez out of the Senate seat.
Knocked Ann Gonzalez out.
It had a big role to play, because all three of those House seats that make up the third Senate district seat that Gonzalez was trying to just walk herself into, thinking it was a sure deal, all went to the Democrats on the House side.
Let me guess that most of them were in that northeast supposedly conservative corridor.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, all three of those seats went over to the Democrats. And so did the Senate.
Well, I can tell you the people in Westerville, before I left, I left Westerville in 2016. People in Westerville were getting fed up with people who were calling themselves Republicans and acting like Democrats. There were a whole lot of pseudo-Republicans and rhinos on city council, which is where Ann Gonzalez came from and learned her trade, how to raise taxes and make it look like it was somebody else's fault. Hey, look, Halley's Comet.
Yeah, exactly. We
talked about Haley's that earlier issue, today. Yeah. Hey, look, Haley's Comet. Oh, wait, yeah, we did raise taxes. Oops.
Yeah, oops.
Yeah. We didn't mean to do that, but we did it. Yeah, you did mean to do that.
Well, Chuck, I know we're getting close to probably our sign-off time, but I'm still sitting here watching off the side of my phone. They're doing farewells of the House members who are not coming back next year, but they still haven't gotten to voting on the Senate amendments on heartbeat. Now, it's after 5 o'clock in the evening because we're out here pulling some little later hours.
Yep.
I may drive all the way back into Columbus at 6 o'clock tonight and still go there and be live for if they vote it. This is getting ridiculous.
It's getting kind of absurd.
It is beyond absurd at this point, and it's obvious that they're stalling. Because they bounced around. Because it's like on the calendar in a certain spot. Well, what they did all afternoon was go to the Speaker Pro Tem who... you know, made a motion for them to take up this thing on the calendar first. Take up this thing on the calendar, skipping that. Just working your way around it, doing it.
Look, we were sitting in there at lunch laughing because they were presenting a conference committee report on highway naming bills.
Yeah, they had to go to... This is why I get frustrated when I'm down there. Okay, folks, a road naming bill is just a feel-good thing where we're going to spend a little bit of money making up some signs. We have Department of Transportation nail them in at one end or the other of a road, and we write it into the statute books that, you know, this section from mile marker X to mile marker X of this particular state route is the so-and-so Memorial Highway. That's really kind of a no-brainer kind of bill. I have never, ever, Chuck, in the 20-plus years I've been there, ever seen them have to go to a conference committee, which means that the Senate and the House could not agree on the final content of the bill.
About the name highways.
They couldn't agree on it, so they refused the change. So one of the chambers, the other, refused the changes that the other chamber had made, which means the other chamber added some other highway names. And they had to call three members of the House and three members of the Senate, schedule a special committee for them to go meet to work out the differences in a highway naming bill. And then when they got it on the floor, if you remember, there was an amendment. So, Chuck, you have to understand why I get frustrated. They can't even cleanly put forth a bill to name highways, which is really not a heavy lift.
No, it's not.
It's the lightest of lifts that we're paying them currently over $60,000 a year apiece to do. Well, but there was a heavier lift they had to do
today. Yes,
there
was. Because
there was another bill. It was a Senate bill that they've amended in the House and they're going to send back. They rolled in. It was a bill to provide for the widows and orphans of firemen and police who die in the line of duty to be able to be treated like military survivors for purposes of PERS and other things. They decided to roll in a legislative pay raise into that bill. So that instead of making $60,000 a year, they'd be making somewhere in the neighborhood of about $68,000. So that got very contentious. And as far as I could tell, when I was driving over here to you, as I'm trying to listen to it online, I'm going to have to go back and look at the calendar, but I'm not sure that that passed. And if it did pass, it was by the slimmest of margins. But the point is, they're fairly sure that the governor is going to veto part of that bill. And since that has appropriations all over it, he gets line item veto, so he can take out the legislative pay raises. Now, they also rolled in county and township raises for elected officials and for the statewide office holders. Chuck, that means the folks who just got elected to office will get a pay raise because they put an emergency clause in the bill to make it take effect immediately upon passage. Wouldn't you like to get that kind of a pay raise? And it's a pay raise that stepped along with the CPI to 2028. So it's a continual pay raise bill. Oops. That was the heaviest lift they think they had to do. But saving 18 to 20,000 babies a year, they can't seem to get around to that.
No, they can raise their pay, but they can't save babies.
They can raise their pay. They can get into a spitting match with their Senate colleagues over which highways get what name. Yes, it's as absurd as it sounds.
It's ridiculous.
But they can't quite get themselves to, let's just finish this, take the Senate amendments, vote it up or down. We know that it's going to be another chance for the left to get media sound bites and scream about how intolerant and anti-woman the Republicans are, and I'd look at them and say,
they're going to do that anyway.
You're going to, it's like, say whatever you want to. This is the issue. Babies are dying. We're saving them. Let's get done. But they're not doing it. It's after five. They're sitting here still doing farewells of members. Chuck, that's filler. That's filler stuff. They could have waited to do all of this at the very end on the last day of session and just said, everybody gets 5 minutes. You get 5 minutes to say your farewells, and the member who's leaving gets 5 minutes, and that's it, and we're done.
Well, the current speaker is basically showing that he has no business sitting in the office.
This happens every session, but this session it's just been painful.
It's easy to understand when, for instance, Bill Batchelder was in there his mm-hmm. last couple of years. Yeah. Because let's face it, he was a sock puppet by that time.
Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right. And let me just throw in a little irony here. As I'm watching this, I was watching one of the members stand up talking. I thought they were doing his farewell because he's leaving. No, the farewell that they're doing right now, instead of voting on the heartbeat bill, is for the sponsor of the heartbeat bill, Representative Christina Hagan, who's leaving at the end of the year. So instead of giving her her vote so her bill can get to the governor and they can try to get it in law, which I think is more important to her than hearing her colleagues say a lot of stuff that
they don't really mean.
That some of them don't really mean. Some of them do, but we try not to let those people get up and talk. No, just kidding. So they're doing her farewell instead of voting her bill. The irony has to be palpable to her. And she's like up at the speaker's dais right now giving her farewell address. I wonder if she's going to use it to browbeat the speaker to say, get my bill voted. Can we get this done, please? You know, okay, you want to say a good farewell to me? Give me the vote on heartbeat. Let's get it to the governor and let's get it done. She's been working on this for 8 years, Chuck.
I know.
She came in 8 years ago and was courageous enough as a freshman legislator to put her name on the bill and lead it, along with Ron Hood, our champion from here in Pickaway County area. Ron's going to be there for two more years, but Christina's leaving. It just really irks me that they don't understand just exactly how hypocritical that seems.
Well, first of all, let me guess. They didn't let her slide into a Senate seat or some other appointment sinecure to keep her career alive?
No, she actually ran for an open seat in Congress.
Oh, she did.
The
okay.
one that Jim Renacci was giving up. And they recruited and ran a guy against her who now is in the seat, Anthony Gonzalez.
Okay. Well, even worse.
Yep. And beat her up along the way because she's too conservative for them.
And that's the problem right there. liberals and squishes have had their chance. How well have they done? I mean, that's the whole Donald mm-hmm. Trump phenomenon. Yep. Look, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Donald Trump is this flaming conservative. He's not. What he is a flaming populist, and he can read the zeitgeist. He knows what the Republicans don't. Guys like Jeff Flake don't, who basically gave his farewell speech today, which nobody cared about, and in fact, in which he embarrassed himself. But,
well, I'm glad C-SPAN keeps an archive of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. After essentially attempting to keep Trump judicial appointments from taking office, only to be thwarted by a tie-breaking vote by Mike Pence.
Of course.
Not shockingly. And so his efforts were for nothing. He thought he had the Trump card, so to speak, and it turned out he had nothing. This is what we have come to expect from Republican Party game players.
That's what you get.
And this is the kind of nonsense. Folks, the next time they come to you and say, we promise this time we're going to do it, guess what? They promised in 2016 we were going to have a wall and where we're going to see Obamacare go away. We have no wall. We now have to arm wrestle with a proposed government shutdown, which Barry and I are both sitting here going,
go ahead.
Shut it down.
Please, shut it down.
Because every time they do, people find out, hey, we really didn't need those guys anyway.
Well, the point is that they don't shut down essential services.
No.
They furlough non-essential personnel
right.
for a week or two until they can use them as bargaining chips. And then when they bring them all back, they back pay them.
They back pay them, and sometimes they give them
A little sweetener for having,
you know, we know you had to dip into savings, so we're going to sweeten the pot a little bit.
Yeah, it's time and time again, that's exactly what happens.
Yeah. So what do you hear? Oh, gosh, the guy who sells peanuts at, Yellowstone National Park had to close his booth because nobody was allowed to come in. Really? Okay. NPR will run these boohoo sessions. Talking about these poor small businessmen who basically grossly overcharged, and it's not their fault. They have to because of the licensing fees they have to pay the government.
Oh, and who was it that pushes for more government intervention and licensure and all the regulations? Oh, that's right, leftists.
Yes. So, look, if this sounds a little cynical, I've been looking all the whole show, and I started before the show started for a quote. And I said, it reminded me of a quote from the movie Gods and Generals. If you haven't seen it, it's not the greatest movie in the world. Make sure if you do watch the director's cut, because you actually figure out what's actually happening in the movie by watching the director's cut. But in any case, there's a character in there called Buster Kilrain, and they've just fought the Battle of Fredericksburg, which was a Union disaster. It was a debacle. It was a mismanagement. They did everything possible you could do wrong, and they did full frontal assaults on a completely
reinforced, entrenched, impregnable
position. Yes. And they just kept sending in brigade after brigade after brigade after brigade to Maurice Heights. And at the end, they're getting a speech from Abraham Lincoln, or they're quoting a letter to all the soldiers. They're forced to read it, and you can tell
it was a telegram dispatched straight from the White House.
Yeah, the colonel who has to read it understands what it is. It's fertilizer.
It's like we're gonna cover our losses kind of thing.
And one of the quotes in there is this is one I love. This is Lincoln's letter. We are thankful that compared to other battles, the losses were relatively slight. And this Sergeant Kilrain says, compared to what? The Scots at Culloden, British at Bunker Hill, the French at Waterloo. Well, that's not the best part of it. But if you know your history, all the people named were slaughtered.
That's right.
And it was
It was a wholesale wipeout of each one of those forces.
After they've been dismissed, as he's walking away, he says, what a beautiful time of the year at Christmas time when the good fairies are in the air and we hear the truth about the Fredericksburg affair in its true light. In other words, he understands that they've had smoke blown
in
places where you're not supposed to blow smoke. And with that being said, we are out of time, But ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to try to find that quote and we'll play it.
That'd be great.
Because that's what's happened here. In any case, you know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.